Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I want to take you back to delay one and delay two, and particularly the second delay. So when you have something like this pop up, if you're the owner of the project and you're the key person on that, on this initiative, when something like that gets missed, if it's me sitting in that seat, I'm going to be sweating a lot because that's like a massive miss. So Tell me about what was going through your head and the conversations that you had to have to explain how this happened, because other people involved in the process that are at a higher level than you are going to want to know, how does something like that gets missed? So what was that conversation like? All of us have seen that meme with the cartoon character that's sitting at the table and in the chair, everything around them is on fire, and that cartoon character has a thought bubble and is saying, everything is fine. What would be the opposite of that? The opposite of that would be a scenario where everything seems to be fine, and at the last possible minute, you discover that there is a massive disaster that you're staring down the barrel of. That's what happened to Melissa Turley. When early on in her career, she was in the middle of a massive implementation, everything seemed to be going along fine, and at the last possible minute, you get told that there's a delay. You navigate that, and then a few months later, it's delayed again. How do you deal with that scenario? It's a big implementation, it's got high visibility, and out of left field twice, you're having to kick the can down the road and readjust what you were planning on doing. That's what we're gonna dig into today. And joining us will be Melissa Turley, who resides in Northern California with her husband and daughter and is a globally experienced HR executive with nearly two decades of leadership across diverse industries, including healthcare, education, construction, and engineering, and maritime oil and gas. She's got over 10 years in senior leadership roles, and she's built and led high-performing multidisciplinary HR teams across the US, Australia, and Singapore, and is often navigating complex multi-state operations for global organizations. Her expertise spans strategic HR leadership, organizational development, and cross-cultural team building with a strong emphasis on operational excellence and talent transformation. She's the newly appointed president-elect of SHRM North State and is committed to advancing the HR profession through collaboration, advocacy, and innovation. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think it's going to be a pretty good discussion. So let's tear the Band-Aid off. What was the moment in your career where you thought, oh, this is bad, I'm going to get fired?
Oh, yes. I have managed many successful projects in the past, but there was one that was particularly problematic, and it affected all the employees in the organization and involved cross-functional teams. It was a big project with a huge impact, so big consequence if it didn't go well. And that was the implementation of a human resources information management system. So initially, everything looked great. I had many meetings with my own team and the other cross-functional team members, and we all agreed that our current system was just not delivering on what we needed. So then we just weren't using it and paying for something that we had no return on investment with. So it wasn't an issue of any resistance to change, which was great. Everyone was on the same page. We needed something to solve our problems. We needed a new system. So we worked closely together on the selection process, and we found a new vendor. We started working with that vendor, and I attended all the implementation meetings, and the other departments were all in the same meetings. We were progressing nicely. We had some issues, as you do with any change implementation, but we learned to pivot and adapt to those changes. When it came to our live date, my team were ready to go live, but it was days before the live date, I received a phone call from an employee in another department and requested an extension to that initial live date for several departments that felt they weren't ready yet. So I understood and I made some calls and we extended it several more months.
I want to dig in a little bit further in terms of the process, because even when you get a request for an extension or a delay, it's not the end of the world, but there's some stuff that I want to make sure that we have line of sight into. So when this project was kicked off, you're dealing with an incumbent system that wasn't serving your needs. Tell us a little bit about the process that you went through to determine that this is in fact a system that isn't meeting expectations. Like, what did that process look like?
Absolutely. There was communication between departments and sharing the issues that we're having. One big factor was reporting, and just other modules weren't flexible. So we could use it, say, 20% of the needs that we had, but it wasn't meeting all of our needs. And it was very expensive. So we did reach out to the existing provider and tried to work in with them is to see if they could tailor it to what we needed. But each change was very expensive. But to make one small change, it might be that'll cost you $4,000. And it just still wasn't meeting our need. So we did try to stay with that current provider, but it just wouldn't work out. So the only alternative was to seek out a new vendor, which all parties were involved. And we came up with a big list of potential vendors. We narrowed those down in criteria by working out what's our existing system doing for us that we'd love, what we would like to have. And each department had certain employees that had to reach out to certain providers and see what they could and couldn't provide. That helped us shortlist the top three providers that we could look at potentially changing over to.
So when I hear you describe it from a process perspective, everything seems tight. It's truly an issue of a capabilities gap that can't be met. There is a clear pricing issue with the incumbent that any changes to get it to work within a desired future state, that's not going to work. Then when you're going through the selection or evaluation process, you have different stakeholders from all the different divisions have their input. You've built out sort of your checklist of requirements. You've gone out to market to... You've done an RFP, you have your feature set, you've evaluated that, now you've narrowed it down to three finalists and you're going through the selection process. So everything along that, I'm not identifying like a process gap. So looking back at deciding that the current vendor isn't good and the process for selecting a new vendor, is there anything that you feel you could have done differently in both of those processes that could have led to a different result?
No, I think it went very well, and I felt quite confident in how that process turned out and that we're all agreeing on the final vendor as well. 99% of people voted for the final vendor.
Okay.
And we're excited to move forward with the implementation with them as well, work closely with them.
What I'm gathering from that is that you have broad-based buy-in across all the different people that are involved. So this isn't a result of some sourpuss in the group, like dragging feet and not making it happen. So you have broad agreement there. Now you're in the implementation phase and you get this request months into the process that, oh, the deadline day is coming. We're going to go live soon. And now you get this request that, hey, we need to delay this. So give us line of sight into all of the stuff that was happening before you get that email. What were the signals that you were getting across the organization that indicated things were moving fine or there may be blockers? Give us a view into that.
Absolutely. I had a lot of conversations with my immediate team who I worked right next to. So accessibility to myself was, it was easily accessible. So I understood what my team capabilities were as well. So I nominated change agents and they had their specialties and worked with the vendors on their areas of expertise. But when you're working with the cross-functional teams, I didn't have as much access to those other departments. And I think there was a big communication breakdown there. I had those regular meetings with staff and we had many meetings with our vendor. I felt like they were actually running a lot of the implementation, which was great to see. And they had many meetings set up every other week. And as we got closer to our go live date, we had more meetings and I was in those meetings listening to everything that was happening. I was getting updates from the other department, the vendors, and my own team. And everything I was hearing was on point. It seemed very accurate. So everyone was saying, yes, we're working on reportings. We'll get that to you. The vendor individually asked certain people, do you have any questions? And they'd answer no. And they consistently asked from meeting to meeting, and they'd say, no, we're fine. And I was a bit concerned, wondering why they were asking some particular people why they might have some question. And they did talk about some reporting and data uploads, some things they were having some issues with, but it's something that could even be fixed later after the live date, was my understanding from witnessing those things. So those were the type of meetings and communication I was receiving up to the first live date. And my own team were telling me they needed to do a lot of the data upload themselves, which was something we didn't anticipate. When we first met with the vendor, it was all, we could do everything. But when it came to the implementation, it wasn't that they could do everything. They were having problems as well. And so my team had to pivot and adjust to doing a lot of the data uploads themselves. But they did manage to meet their deadlines. And that's why we were ready to go live on the first date, until I was contacted by the other departments saying that they need an extension.
When you got that email notification, in your mind, what were the known knowns that could set this thing on a completely off track?
Yeah, something that would have created more alarm bells is employees saying that they were struggling and actually being upfront in those meetings or reaching out to me and my team and saying, hey, I'm not really on track. But it would have been nice to hear that weeks before going live, and we could have then worked closer together and came up with different plans and helped support each other to help them reach those goals to maintain our live date. I felt like it was very reactive and not proactive. And to leave it to that last minute really surprised me.
At the last possible minute, you get this request for an extension or a delay, which can sometimes happen. What did you discover when you probed on, okay, we can get you an extension, but what happened? What was the what happened story?
Absolutely. The first date, as you mentioned, that's not surprising in a project such as this. But when it came to the request months later to extend the live date the second time, that's what was very alarming to me. And all stakeholders were called into a meeting to discuss what was happening, because we had an extension for several months. We should be there by now. And what really surprised me in that meeting, I was expecting the other departments to say they needed more time because their data wasn't accurate after auditing, or there's a final report we just need to run. What really shocked me was several employees said they hadn't even logged in yet. And that's not even before our first live date. Like, I'm recollecting all the meetings, the conversations, them being asked, are they okay? Do they have any questions? And say no, to get to pass the second live date to say they hadn't even logged into the system yet. That was a lesson learned for me.
So that's a massive miss. So there's a couple of different things that I'm curious about. So you're having regular meetings when it comes to the project management piece of it, because you'll have different status updates and deliverables and things like that. And everybody's saying everything's fine. And then one of the things that you find out is nobody's logged in. How does something like that get missed?
Exactly. And I had to step back myself and reassess what happened to that point. And what I came up with is, I thought all our communication had been with the vendor, and it was in a big group setting. And I felt like some of these employees perhaps didn't feel confident speaking up in that setting and saying, I'm not on track and I need help. And we didn't have internal meetings between our departments or one-on-ones. We were particularly relying on those two-hour meetings with our vendors, which we were accomplishing a lot, so it seemed, and what we were seeing and hearing. But now seeing the results at that point on that second delay, I think that would have been very helpful to happen sooner. And that's what I changed at that point.
If I'm understanding this correctly, there's an external implementation plan where the vendor is defining what needs to be done by who and who owns that. But what I'm gathering from what you're describing is that there wasn't a mirrored version of that internally, where all of the different swim lanes were defined, the accountabilities and deliverables weren't defined or mapped out or owned. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, we did have a plan, but it wasn't as detailed. And I think when you're having that planning, putting in all the vendor meetings every other week, and there are several hours, and everyone's saying we don't need extra meetings, I think that was very lax. And when we had responsibilities, it was more a department accountability. Payroll would get this done, or finance would do this, or IT would do that, and HR would do this. What I would prefer to do in what I do now is break it down into detail. You need more detailed accountability. So give a person responsible for a particular task, and not just a department and a time frame, and also weigh up what those tasks are. What's the risk of not having them done in a timely fashion? So, for example, auditing a program, auditing the data. If it says audit data and you have a department who needs to do it and it's marked off, it's done. Sounds great. But what was audited and what was the results? Was it 50% incorrect? Are we still 50% incorrect? Did we audit the benefits but not the compensation of these employees? And not having that accurate and going live can be very dangerous. You can have a system that you've met your live date, but it's only as good as the information that's put in it, which could have grave consequences as well.
So that makes sense from a hindsight perspective, but I want to take you back to delay one and delay two, and particularly the second delay. So when you have something like this pop up, if you're the owner of the project and you're the key person on that, on this initiative, when something like that gets missed, if it's me sitting in that seat, I'm going to be sweating a lot because that's like a massive miss. So Tell me about what was going through your head and the conversations that you had to have to explain how this happened, because other people involved in the process that are at a higher level than you are going to want to know, how does something like that gets missed? So what was that conversation like?
Absolutely. And that was all part of responsibility and accountability being detailed as well. So these projects, you don't manage them every week, that are cross-functional projects. Often you'll manage projects in your immediate team. So it does warrant a different level of control and communication, which I think I was more focused on my immediate team and what I was hearing and managing. And there were managers at the same level as me overseeing their own team. And I didn't want to overstep my authority and be managing someone else's department as well. So I think myself, ownership and knowing what was I responsible for, to what extent was it for every department, which wasn't my understanding as well. However, the success of those other departments affected the success of my team as well. On that second delay, I also discovered more information in that. And it was that someone in the other department had contacted our existing HRIS provider and canceled that as well without communicating. And when we started this project, I was also told to step back and delegate more, get out of the trenches. And that was part of the reason why I relinquished more control than I normally would in past projects. And in addition to that is I trusted what I was hearing and seeing. So that was why my level of control was pulled back. And then when I heard about the second request or was involved in that process where people hadn't even logged in and we needed to extend it, I got back in the trenches and I managed how I would other projects in the past. And I was then meeting with other employees one-on-one across departments then and having internal meetings with my department and other departments to meet that goal and that next live date, which we did. But I myself rang the providers and extended our existing company and extended the incoming vendor. And that was 3 days before a payroll was meant to be run. And so we wouldn't have made payroll if they didn't extend our existing contract. So that was a high risk consequence for this as well. And that was where I feel more comfortable being in the trenches, where communication is more immediate. And then I can respond a lot quicker, which improves success on meeting our goals as well. So my management style completely changed as well.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. So there's two different things that's happening right now. So one, you have a project that's been delayed a second time and you have to set up a firefighting mode to get it back on track. And then you have this cancellation bit that's happening with the existing vendor, with the incumbent that was canceled without your knowledge. So you have to solve that fire, but you're operating under the instructions that you need to be more strategic versus hands-on or granular in the effort. So you have a lot of these different competing things that you're going that are happening all at the same time. So you have to triage those things and solve those. Now, once you get out of it, there's a bunch of things that you probably gathered from it. You went from hands-on to extremely hands-off to extremely hands-on. because that's what's needed to avoid like a catastrophe or not making payroll. Now, having zoomed out from that scenario, the question that I have is, how do you strike a balance between being strategic and still having line of sight when there are no obvious signs of issues going on within the project? That's the central issue that you're dealing with. Everything seems fine until it's not. And when you realize that it's not, everything's on fire and we have to move quickly. So what's the middle ground or control systems that you set up as a result?
That's where I set up then change agents in the other departments as well. So I was working with particular contacts in those departments while we worked through these urgent matters. So instead of having a whole department meeting, we narrowed it down to pairing up certain employees with other department employees to work closely and help each other and with the vendor, and putting in more strict and well-defined dashboards as well. So where people can update information more immediately instead of waiting for meetings to give updates. So things like Google Docs, Gantt charts, that sort of thing. And just breaking down who's doing what, when, and making sure that we had regular meetings and held those people accountable. So they knew Thursday, 3 o'clock, this meeting, these are the 5 top things we need to have done to make this happen. And that was that different level of control as well. So change agents, dashboards, and also celebrating wins. We had to celebrate the wins of those that had done their jobs as well in time. And that helps with the transparency, builds accountability, right? So we also celebrated those that had achieved their goals and used those top agents, change agents that were successful to try and help work closer with the ones that were struggling. And time was an issue as well for all staff, as it is when you take on a big project on top of your normal busy life and work life. And I was one of them as well. I was very busy and short-staffed. And I think it was great listening to everyone saying they're all on track, everything's going great. And I felt comfortable to pull back then and concentrate on other projects. But I had to change then at that time when I had to get back in the trenches. But I had to find time as well and be intentional about setting that time aside. So one book I'd read was called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And he spoke about the importance of finding focused and uninterrupted work. And so I took that on board and I had to shut my door and prioritize these things at that time to make sure that these vendors were contacted and contracts extended. Everything else had to just be put on hold.
So one of the things that I'm wondering about when you describe this implementation, one thing that I don't think we talked about was the level of maturity of the organization and the people within the organization in handling this sort of implementation. So had you done this sort of stuff before within the organization, or was this sort of the first big implementation that the organization had gone through?
I would say it was the first big project that was implemented. There was a lot of employees had been there 10 years or so, but I hadn't worked on a cross-functional team with these particular employees as well. So it was all very new. And many people in their career don't have the experience or opportunity to go through implementing a HRIMS, for example. You can go into an organization, be there for 4 years and move to another one. You may learn a new program, but you're not necessarily the one transitioning or implementing a new one. And so it's not something I've done in every position in my career either. So I think that had a lot to contribute to the ebbs and flows and the performance and the changes of our implementation dates, is that we're all learning as we went. So it's certainly not a blame game. It was more of we're making mistakes, learning as we go. And what would we do differently? And so we had meetings at the end where you want to do a postmortem on any project and find out what did we do well, what do we do badly, and what would we change, and document that and then reflect on it. If you have a similar project like this in the future, that hopefully we could prevent those things from happening again, and take a risk management approach. I think spend more time to plan and assess what's the consequences of these particular tasks not being met in a timely manner, and break it down to stages as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of those steps are good. And I think probably the starting point whenever you're looking at any sort of large implementation like this, and this is for somebody else that might be listening in, is you need to do a maturity assessment of the organization. Have we done this sort of stuff before? What's our capability of doing something like this? Do we need to bring in additional resources to give us the support that we need from an experience perspective so that we can pull this off. So that's probably one of those things that if I'm thinking about taking something like this on, I would want to have that assessment done on the front end before deciding roles and responsibilities and accountabilities as well.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I think spending more time, whether it's a day or a few hours, is plan and take that risk assessment and see where you stand. What's the skill sets of your current employees? Do you need an external consultant? Do you have references on the current vendor and feel more confident that they can really help get you through this process?
When you think through what we've gone through so far and you're looking back on it and you're building a recipe for success to pull this off, what are the key things that somebody needs to be thinking about doing before even getting started on the vendor selection process?
You certainly need to have the involvement of the right stakeholders. So you would not exclude IT, for example, or payroll if it's their main system and just have HR involved. You need to look at who should be involved and do you need all of those people involved? And then selecting, as I mentioned earlier, with change agents, have one representative from each department who then has accountability for following up with their own department and team as well on helping them reach their goals. Have more communication internally across departments, team building, trying to spark conversations. I felt a lot of this process was, we're segregated, a lot of the departments. And I think we could have spent a lot more team building at the beginning to bring everyone closer. While we're all on the same page, we wanted a new system, we're all going for that mission. I felt there was a lot of disconnect on relationships and departments because if they were working closer together, they may have felt more confident and safe to speak up when they had problems and we could have worked a lot closer together as well. So having that, assessing your risks, prioritizing your tasks. I love doing Gantt charts, splitting them up, say, into four stages and color coding them and prioritize those tasks in each section. And when you complete those sections, celebrate those as small wins. I think that's motivating for employees. And do a team building event. It may be donut day or ice cream day or axe throwing day if you feel like to get rid of those frustrations with implementing such a system. And so I think there's a lot of planning that needs to be done at the beginning and don't look at things that seem visibly okay. Drill down on details. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Be curious. Not micromanaging staff either. It's very different to get in the trenches alongside your staff and have an opportunity to find out things that may be a problem and give you the opportunity to remove roadblocks. Your staff have skills and they're hired for a reason. They're there and can contribute. So you need to collaborate with cross departments and your own team to help with success. So I think a lot of the setup, like you said, the framework, and if you've put in a project like this before or another department and they've done an assessment of what went well before, pull on that information. See if you can learn from that. Don't reinvent the wheel. Try and reach out to other companies who may have implemented a system and see if they have a framework you may be able to tailor. And there's lots of AI products too. And with your dashboards, you can put Excel spreadsheets into, there's a site called thebricks.com, which is another resource that you could use. So there's so many things there now. We didn't use Google Docs at the time, at the beginning. These are things that would have been a lot better than just spreadsheeting. So technology now has helped a lot with these processes.
So when I take inventory of all the things that you said, I think one of the big misses in this experience that you're talking about is that it seemed like you were moving way faster than you should have been. There should have been a lot more time on the planning side of it. So if you had a chance to hit rewind on it, what would be some of the things that you would have done to slow the process down with a particular focus on uncovering the blind spots that probably led you to the double delay?
Yes, I would certainly step back and spend a lot more time planning and have a more realistic go live date. I think we had false hope and were so excited from hearing it's like a sales pitch from a vendor and we were so frustrated with our current system. I think that was a big motivating factor as well, that we just couldn't wait to get rid of our current system and move to something else that would make our day-to-day work lives a lot easier. Instead of taking 3 hours to try and build a report, for example, having a system that promises you could tailor it in 5-10 minutes, it's a big motivating factor. And not having done it before, I think that's where your realistic timelines aren't so realistic. And the vendor is very optimistic, of course. So we're all on this happy moment. We're all on board. Again, no resistance to change is a good thing. But then it could be counterproductive in some ways where we may not have spent enough time. Well, we didn't, I feel, spend enough time planning and looking under the hood a bit closer. And we're just looking at what was evident in front of us of being too optimistic. And unfortunately, it backfired in many ways. So I think there's a lot I would change. I would definitely ask more questions and document more and drill down on responsibilities to help with accountability and understand what my role was as well and to what extent, and reach out to the managers in those departments and try and help where I could. But that time was a problem as well. And I would certainly be more involved because of the consequences of that sort of job. That project was important.
Now, one of the other things that I think about when you're describing this particular situation is that there wasn't a clear line or definition of who owns what when. So when you look at that muddy ownership or accountability matrix, how would you clear that up in this process of getting things more defined?
Yes, I think that's where once you've selected your vendor, you should have a pre-project planning meeting. And not with your vendor. Initially, you should have it internally with the key stakeholders and establish who will be doing what, including myself. What's my accountability? Is my accountability across all departments or just my own? And so that's important. And then that helps give me the authority, visible authority in other departments to be able to reach out and not feel like I'm encroaching on their space or you don't manage my department. And not that I wanted to do that. It's just more of a helping them succeed part and working together, because in one organization, we should all be working towards a common goal. But that can help as well. And then I am responsible if something happens over there as well. I'm partly responsible for any misfortunes in reaching our goals. So I think that's important too, to have that visibility and have that collaboration from all departments and people. Let them volunteer and take accountability themselves of what they're going to do. And that's where I think you get more buy-in and then track it from there and hold people accountable, but then celebrate those small wins as well. People need to be engaged and rewarded as you go.
Yeah, I might be off base, but when I hear you describe what happened, I think some of these problems that popped up can come from a discomfort of getting into other people's kitchens. Like you've said several times, you don't want to overstep your bounds or you don't want to micromanage somebody else's group. And I think that's internalizing like your own mindset or fear of being perceived as not nice or being perceived as meddling. When you're looking at these sort of like big projects, it would almost seem like every leader's got to be willing to get into each other's kitchens and question the assumptions that people are operating in. Am I off base in reading that?
You're absolutely right. And it was also in line with the feedback I received from my manager is to step back and start delegating and get out of the trenches. And so that was also a reason why I wasn't as proactive and getting involved in both my own department and the other departments. So that was partly why I took that route, that leadership route as well. Yes, and it can be to the extent of my perception too. I don't want to overstep, but I've also been told to step back. So it was very conflicting for me to try and get a project managed correctly without being able to manage the way that I've done it in the past and trying to follow some feedback.
So great conversation so far. And I think we covered a lot of ground, but I want you to zoom out and I want you to think about that person that's maybe taking on their first major implementation within their role in HR. What's the biggest piece of advice that you would give them that will set them up for success when they're taking on this major implementation for maybe the first time in their career?
Yes, I would say step back and take a look at the big picture. Be curious, ask questions, and drill down on details. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Reach out to other managers and also reach out to your employees and collaborate. They have so much to offer and they're there to support you as well. And so you get buy-in with change management when you collaborate, but you also need to reach out to those other managers and not be afraid of any pushback. Don't be afraid that if you don't know how to do something or you're struggling, we all need help at some stage. And it ends up worse if you don't ask for help now. And many people are there to help. And so I think that's something that I wish a lot of the other employees did with us. And just look at the settings, give more opportunities for different ways to communicate. I know there's a different workplace now with remote workers and people located in different areas. Try and come up with different ways to communicate. In this case, we had the vendors communicating mainly in these group settings, but I think some people may feel embarrassed if they're overworked and they can't meet these goals and they don't want to tell a vendor and their manager in the meeting, oh, I haven't done the job that I told you I'm on track with. I think they need a safe space. So have one-on-one, go out to other departments and really reach out and see how they're doing. It's amazing how much you learn and people open up to you when you're in that setting instead of a group setting. And that information is wonderful when you're going through something like this, because it gives you an advantage to learn about problems early and you can adjust your strategies to address those early before you get to a point where I got to in this project and having these live dates pushed out. And it's best to know about these things sooner. Just take a deep breath. Don't put too much pressure on yourself either. I think being a leader, you really need to take care of yourself. There's a book I read called Let Them by Mel Robbins, and it's called The Let Them Theory. And she speaks about just letting people be who they are, but let you be who you are as well. It's the most powerful thing in leadership is to just let them and step back and don't take on all the burden that's not yours to carry and relinquish control. It's okay. You can only refocus your energy and lead with clarity and peace on the things that you can control. So that's probably the best advice I could give. And learn from your mistakes. We're not perfect, but ask for help from other people that have experience in it before. And that's the best part about experience is you get to have an opportunity to make mistakes and learn from them.
If people want to continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Melissa Turley in Redding, California. You should be able to find me out there. I'd love to hear from anyone.
I appreciate you hanging out with us and sharing this story. And I think it's a really important one for a lot of reasons. I think when I think about this conversation, there's a few things that I want to emphasize. And I think the first is don't rely on your assumptions and don't rely on your assumptions being the right assumptions when you're looking at big initiatives like this. One of the things that I think everybody needs to understand when they're taking on big initiatives of any type, regardless of your experience level, there's a handful of things that we need to understand. There's a set of known knowns, a set of known unknowns, and the unknown unknowns. And that's what you have to pay attention to, is what are the unknown unknowns or the blind spots that you're dealing with that you need to tackle and get ahead of so the project doesn't go sideways. Now, when you take that into account, you also have to weigh that against the pain of standing still, the pain of change, and the pain of getting wrong. So when you combine both of those things, the instinct could be to move faster than you need to move to sort out all of these different issues. And that's where you get into trouble. So the biggest thing that I take away from this, and it's consistent with a lot of different change initiatives, is that in order to pull these things off well, you really need to be mindful and intentional about slowing down the process on the front end of it and making sure that everything is spelled out with a degree of detail that makes you uncomfortable to get this done. And I think the big thing that I pull away from this conversation is that there may have been an unwillingness to be uncomfortable on the front end of the process that led to blind spots that ended up catching people flat-footed. So if I'm armchair quarterbacking this situation, it would be the advice would be make sure that you're slowing down to an uncomfortable degree so that you're not getting caught off guard with something that comes out from left field. So for those of you who've been listening to this conversation, we appreciate you hanging out. Make sure you leave us a review on your favorite podcast player and subscribe to the show. And then tune in next time where we'll have another leader hanging out with us and sharing with us the stories and the mistakes that they made that ended up actually helping them hit fast forward on their career and their transformations. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection.
See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.